This is Oren Evans inviting you to join me in the Jazz Room with host Joan Watson Jones.
Hello, welcome to the Jazz Room. I'm your host, Joan Watson Jones. Thanks for stopping by. Come in, relax, enjoy some great jazz. Each week we present the music of independent jazz artists as well as those we've grown to love through the years. And yes, of course, the legends. Today we welcome pianist-composer Oren Evans. We met before his set at the Pittsburgh International Jazz Festival. In part one of this interview, we'll talk about his CD, The Red Door, The Meaning of Red, The Jazz Train, and Our Jazz Elders. You're listening now to Feed the Fire. Enjoy. Thank you. Welcome to the Jazz Room, Orrin Evans.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for taking the time before you start performing at the Pittsburgh International Jazz Festival.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I'm so happy to meet you. And I hear you were on the jazz train. Let's talk about that first.
The jazz train was awesome. You know, it's an idea that honestly came to me through a friend years ago. And I'm not sure where they were going. It might even been a wedding party or something. And this is over maybe 30 years ago. And she said, I'm going to put a trip together and we're going to go on Amtrak. And we'll just have a whole car to ourselves. And I said, wow. She said, that way you can do whatever you want in the car. And I said, oh, wait a minute. That sounds like a good idea. So I called up Amtrak and talked to Janice from the festival. And it was awesome. You know, it was definitely getting it together to figure out getting people leaving from three different locations and getting people on the train and getting the instruments on the train. And then how to do it next year, because it's a big train.
So you had performances.
Oh, we played at least three of the 3 hours of the 7 hour trip, and then we did jazz trivia and gave away some awards and stuff and prizes. People talked and we met new, because everybody didn't know each other. It wasn't like we're all on this train together. This was definitely, you know, people from all over the world. Some people flew in and then jumped on the train. So it was not a relaxing train. I'm not going to say get on this train and go to sleep, because it was a party train. And it was a lot of fun, you know. So
okay.
We really enjoyed it.
So where did you take off?
New York, Newark, and Philadelphia. And then we got the instruments on, which was all on in New York. And then some people jumped on in Philly later as far as the musicians. And that little area when you get on Amtrak, where it's the little area up front, normally for handicap, is where we set the band up. And it was beautiful. And Amtrak was amazing. You know, you had two different conductors, and one conductor was just keeping the party going on the microphone and everything. The second conductor was a little more tame, but definitely welcoming and inviting. So it was really just special.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
So much fun.
All right, now, you have a new CD.
I do.
What's it called?
The Red Door.
And tell us about it. Tell us your concept and what you want to do.
Well, growing up, I grew up in the Church of God in Christ, the Kojic Church, and spent a lot of time. I'm the youngest. So in the last part, it was just me and my mother most of that time. And going to church every week with her. More than that, we were going to church 8 days a week. So it was like we're going and hanging out. And so I learned a lot, but I also learned a lot of fear that is put in us as a people that with no true answers. So by that I mean red, which was, and you know, I grew up into some different colors, but red was my favorite color as a kid. But red was dark, you know, in my family. You know, it was like, oh, don't go near that red. That red light means it's a brothel. That red, you know, everything was dark. Red was the devil. Everything. So I'm like, well, I like red. So it took some time for me to say, you know, let me see. Red is also Valentine. Red is also our heart. Red is also, there's a lot of joy in that beautiful color. And so the red door signifies the opportunity to open that door and see what's on the other side and not, you know, live it within that fear that we're taught. That's just based on, when I use this word, I don't mean it to be harsh, but it's just based on ignorance. It's we don't know what's on the other side, so now we're scared of it. You know, we don't know what that other religion is about, so we're scared of it. We don't know what that person from another country is about, so we're scared of it. And this really is about opening that door and seeing what's on the other side. And that's how I look at music. You know, there's other people joke with me because they're like, you're friends with all the different musicians. And it is, you know, I'll have five different bass players that I love at one party. And people don't do that. You know, you normally hang with the one or two people that you in your band. And I'm like, no, I want to get to know everybody. So
no,
it's really,
I know what you're saying.
You know,
I know what you're saying. I'm in the music thing myself.
Yep.
And it's interesting to hear how your family had that red in my family too, my grandmother, you didn't wear red shoes.
Yep, exactly, 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 exactly.
So I'm sitting here and go, I have to say this one because that was very.
Yep.
And she just said once, God, I love those shoes. You know what? I'm going to buy them anyway.
Exactly. I could have called it the red shoes.
Here's the title tune from his CD, The Red Door. You're in the Jazz Room. I'm your host, Joan Watson Jones. We continue with our interview with pianist-composer Orrin Evans at the Pittsburgh International Jazz Festival. Now that we're talking about your family and so on, when did you find the piano or the piano find you?
Well, I grew up around the music. My mother was an opera singer, and then my father was a playwright and a part of the Black Arts Movement. So I was around the theater and performing, so I didn't know any other thing to do but perform, you know, whether it was poetry reading, storytelling. Point was, I was going to do something performing. I was going to be on the stage. And then there was always a piano in the house because my mother would practice with different pianists. My father played a little bit, you know, as a hobby. And then my sister was the main one taking piano lessons. And I just would bang on it, you know, and make up songs and stuff. I didn't really, at the early part, I didn't want to learn to play the piano. I was riding my bike, you know, it was all about riding outside. But when my parents separated, we moved from Trenton, New Jersey to Philadelphia. And we moved to a neighborhood that was filled, my little short block was filled with all retired, you know, vets and people who worked at either the mill or worked down at the shipyard. Everybody didn't want any kids on that block. And I was 11 or 12 years old living on that block, no kids. So I came from Trenton, New Jersey with a kid-friendly block to move to Philadelphia. And I didn't have the bikes anymore, people to ride bikes with anymore, but the piano was there. So that's how my love started for it again. You know, like I played in Trenton, but I wasn't serious about it. But when there was nothing else to do, I looked over and I was like, okay. You know, and I went and started playing the piano more and started studying with Charles Petaway, who was one of my mother's accompanists at the time in Philadelphia. And then I went to a school called Girard Academic Music Program, which was like the performing arts school in Philadelphia. There were two, and this was the second one. And I just found misfit people like me, you know, little kids that wanted to figure out how music was made. And that started the journey.
Up next is Smoke Rings. in jazz, we've got generations now. At some time, you've met jazz elders, worked with those jazz elders. Any come to mind with you that you have met, worked with, played
well,
with?
Well, not only, I actually lived with them too, because my uncle, my uncle that I moved in with was a jazz saxophonist. And at the time, he was touring with Trudy Pitts and Shirley Scott, two great jazz organists out of Philly. So I was surrounded by the elders. They were my babysitters. They were ever Mickey Roker, Bobby Durham, Arthur Harper, just growing up in Philadelphia. There were some amazing, Evelyn Sims, Johnny Coles. I was blessed. Whether I went to a formal school or not, it didn't matter because I was getting it right there in Philadelphia. It was a great place to grow up. And I say it was, not that it isn't now, but the elders, there's two things happening. Either the elders who are elders now aren't taking the responsibility of being elders, or it's just not that same type of world, and the younger ones don't go seek the elders. For me, when I moved to New York, I had to go seek George Cables. I had to go seek John Hicks, Ronnie Matthews. I had to go find them. I had to find a way to get into the clubs. And if I couldn't get into the clubs, you stand outside Bradley's and listen. I had to go seek them. Now, they send you an email and want to study with you on Skype. And the whole process of going out and seeking the information from the elders is different, But for me, I was blessed. I was definitely blessed to have those elders around.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I know the feeling very well. And I want to talk about the music from your elders and how you developed your sound from there.
It took being around the right elders that encouraged you to find your voice. That doesn't always happen. You'll meet some people and they try to make you play like they want you to play, to be in your band. Whereas you had some of the leaders, like Art Blakey, who said, come on, let me help you find your sound. I'm not going to make you sound like me, even though we're all a part of the Messengers. I want you to find your voice. Then when you find your voice, it's time for you to go on and do your thing. Just one of my favorite comments is that I've heard that Blakey said was, this is not the post office. You don't retire from here. You move on and you get another one. You go somewhere else. You don't stay there the whole time. If you have that kind of elder, which I did, not all of them, but Hamia Blewett was one of those for me where he helped me find my sound. Oliver Lake, certain people were like, okay, I hear where you're coming from. Let me just let you do your thing and find your sound. But then there's other ones who are like, this is how you play with me. And there's a time and a place for that, too. But for me, I felt more akin to the elders who helped me find my voice and not just the voice that they wanted to hear. And that's a tricky situation. You have to know what the information you seek, what that information is, and know when you're getting it and know when you're not getting it. And it might be okay if this person is an elder to say, I want to get some information from somewhere else. Because being older doesn't make you an elder. Just age is given to everybody. We're all going to get old. But it's what you do with that time that you've been on this earth and then how you share that information based on the time that you've spent on this earth. The time is just the time. But what did you do with that time?
Finally, here is All the Things You Are. In part two, we'll talk more with Oren about his original music and the musicians on his CD. Learn more about him at orenevans.com. We've come to the end of another show. Thank you for spending time here with us in the Jazz Room. You may see photographs of Orrin Evans and many, many more jazz artists on the Jazz Room page of my website, JoanWatsonJones.com. Until next time, you've been in the Jazz Room. I'm your host, Joan Watson Jones.